Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
It's 6:04. Welcome to it. It's our program, Austin Hill in the Morning. Thank you for being here on the Faith Radio Network. And thank you for your support of the Faith Radio Network. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. Here's hoping you had a great weekend, a safe and productive and, a restorative weekend. How's that? We've got the batteries recharged and ready to go for a new week. I hope so. Coming up later this morning, here's a question for you. Think about this. We'll talk about this. And to just open up the phone lines coming up into the second hour of our program, is it time for a new Bible in America or anywhere else in the world for that matter? Are you ready for a new Bible? Do you think we need a new Bible, a new translation, if you will, that has no chapter or verse references? Take out all the numbers and, you know, the categories that the Holy Bible has been broken down to down through the centuries. Take out the chapter and verse references. Oh, and by the way, eliminate all the notes. All the study notes and study guides and historical references and all that extra academic stuff that researchers and theologians and scholars have sort of added over there in the margins in the various traditions of the Bible, various translations, I should say. There is, believe it or not, in the midst of how tumultuous our economy is right now, there is a very interesting entrepreneurial venture that is underway right now. It's raising a lot of money to produce a new Bible that looks something like that. No chapters, no verses, no numbers, no study notes. It's just, you know, it's just the Bible, just the substance of the words themselves. We'll talk about that later this morning. It cuts in a lot of different directions, actually. I can imagine as I describe this to you, you're thinking, well, it's kind of interesting, but maybe not so much. Okay, it's kind of how it struck me when I first saw this news. But is it time for a new Bible? Do we really need an additional translation of the Bible? We'll talk about that later this morning here on our program. Also, well, later today, our great friend Lisa Marone, health expert. She's a physical therapist, professor, author, and speaker who encourages people to, quote, get healthy for heaven's sake. She's got some new details on cholesterol and things that we all need to be watching for, even in terms of cholesterol medication. Sometimes, you know, in previous generations, perhaps this was true for your parents and grandparents, the doctor, you go to your physician, the doctor writes a prescription and says, here, take two of these per day or whatever it is. Oh, and by the way, take all of them, finish the prescription, don't just take half the bottle, take all of it. And our parents and grandparents said, okay, well, the doctor said, so this is what I have to do. In my generation and in your generation and most adults today in America, I would say, we question what is handed down to us as authoritative from our physicians. And, you know, the doctor says, take this. Well, we want to go look up online and find what's the alternative medication or how could I find some non-medicinal treatment for these kinds of things. People like Lisa Marone, who, she's not a medical doctor, she is a physical therapist, she's accustomed to dealing with ailments and health problems in non-medicinal sorts of ways. And Lisa Marone just brings a wealth of information to us, all from a very biblical and very spiritual, theologically based sort of context. So that's coming up later in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, looking forward to this, we're going to talk to our great friend Greg Yoder, who is the executive director of Mission Network News. Mission Network News. Now, in the midst of all the headlines, most of which are very negative, that say the government and the military of the country of Russia is pummeling the otherwise sovereign country of Ukraine, which is, we've talked a fair amount about that here on this program, and this is something that should not escape the attention, I don't believe, of those of us who are Christians living in the free world right now. In the midst of all of this, Greg Yoder will weigh in just about half an hour from now, with some of the latest details that they're observing at Mission Network News. They do a great job at Mission Network News of really enlightening the rest of the world, the free world in particular, about the plight of the suffering church in other parts of the world. So Greg Yoder coming up just about half an hour from now. Stand by when we come back. A quick update on a lady named Miriam Ibrahim. We've talked about her before, and there is another gentleman, a pastor from right here in the United States, who is in captivity. He is being held by the very brutal government of Iran. What's the appropriate response from Christians here in the U.S. to the plight of Pastor Saeed Abedini? We'll talk about it coming up next. This is Austin Hill in the Morning. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network at 6:09. Morning, it's 6:10, and thank you for being here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning, 6 till 8, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support to the Faith Radio Network. Let's talk for a moment about Christians who live in states of oppression simply because of the faith that they cling to, the same faith that you and I share with them. Now, you've probably become quite familiar with the name Miriam Ibrahim. She is a woman from the Sudan who actually is married to an American man. She gave birth earlier this year to a brand new baby. This was back in May of this year. She was also being held in a very brutal prison where we are told she was literally chained to the floor of her jail cell in the Sudan. And her offense, her great offense, that which sent her got her sent to the prison, was the fact that she did not embrace the predominant Islamic Muslim faith in her home country. As a matter of fact, we are told that we actually had members of her own family reporting her to the government. She married a Christian man. Worse yet, she married a Christian man from the United States of America, and she was sentenced to a very, very brutal prison term. Well, by miracles, I believe a miracle of God, a lot of prayer from a lot of people throughout the Western world, and some good work with people within the United States government and outside of it, Miriam Ibrahim has been returned. She's freed from captivity. We talked about this a fair amount last week. She was released from the prison in Sudan, went to Italy to meet with Pope Francis, interestingly enough, and she is soon to be joining her husband here stateside. On the other hand, we have a gentleman whose name is Saeed Abedini. Now, that name, right from the get-go, you might hear the name Saeed, S-A-E-E-D, Saeed Abedini, and think, well, this guy probably isn't an American. He is a native-born of Iran, but he is also a naturalized citizen here in the United States. He is every bit as American as I am. Perhaps he's every bit as American as you are. He was a pastor for quite some time at a Calvary Chapel church in Boise, Idaho, traveled back to Iran to engage in Christian ministerial activity with those he believes are still lost in Iran, and he's been held in captivity ever since. As a matter of fact, he is currently serving an 8-year term of prison sentence in a very brutal prison in that very brutal country of Iran. Joining us to talk about it with some perspective, an organization that's actually helping out quite a bit in terms of legal counsel, legal advice, and legal input. Jordan Seculo joins us. He's on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Jordan Seculo, welcome to the program, sir. Hello.
Thanks for having me, Austin.
Good to be with you. Can you give us an update as to the legal status for the moment? Then we'll get into some of the other considerations, but the legal status of Saeed Abedini as he languishes in a prison in Iran.
Sure. Saeed's been imprisoned. Today marks actually 671 days in Iran, only because of his Christian faith. And to explain to people how he got into the situation, as you rightly said, he is a naturalized American citizen with an American wife and two American children that are here in the United States. His wife was also born in Iran, but came over to the U.S. as a kid in the 80s. And, you know, of course, his two children who have been in the United States, born in the United States, haven't seen their dad in 2 years. He left for his actually ninth trip in 3 years to go back to Iran 2 years ago in June to finish work on what he believed he was being called to do, which was an orphanage that would primarily serve Iranian, of course, Iranian children, but Muslim children, because the government had warned him, this was years back, to no longer do work with the underground churches.
Now, which government was it that issued the warning, Jordan? Jordan, which government was it that issued the warning? Was it the Iranian government or the U.S. government?
Yeah, the Iranian government. And they didn't, you know, he wasn't arrested, he wasn't imprisoned, and they didn't stop him from continuing his travel to Iran. And so, and it's not actually uncommon for Iranian Americans to make trips back. His whole family is there. So he prayed about what he should do next. And he felt called to, because he was now in the United States and had more resources to do the, build this orphanage. And we've posted photos before. I mean, this was about to be done. It was in northern Iran in a city called Rasht. And he was back on his ninth trip in 3 years, so a number of trips, and was about to leave. He was getting the final approval from the local government on his board of directors for the orphanage. And he was picked up by the Revolutionary Guard. That was in July of 2012. In September, and I'm saying that September 26th, he was in the middle of the night, early morning hours, taken from where he was under house arrest for about 6 weeks and put into prison. And that was first in Evin prison in Tehran, which is notorious for political prisoners. Then he was tried in January of 2013, sentenced to 8 years because of work attempting to overthrow the government of Iran because of illegal meetings is what they called it. That was the work with the church. So these charges dated back about a decade.
Okay, Jordan, secular standby. We'll continue in just a moment. We appreciate the historical background here. What's next for our fellow Christian, our fellow American, Jordan Seculo from the American Center for Law and Justice on the guest line? We'll continue with him in moments. It's 6:16. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Good morning, 6:18 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're talking about our fellow American, our fellow Christian, Pastor Saeed Abedini.
Despite what the Iranian government says, pressures and the media regarding Saeed and getting the word out is helping his situation.
Getting the word out, that's his wife, Nagme Abedini, talking about the plight of her husband who's still in prison in the country of Iran. Jordan Seculo is the executive director of the American Center for Law and Justice, a international public interest law firm, nonprofit group that does great work. He's on the guest line with us here on the Faith Radio Network. Jordan, you gave us some of the history that has led up to this imprisonment. As I understand it, Saeed Abedini is still, he's in the midst of what the Iranian government has declared an 8-year prison sentence. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And what we're seeing now is, because of the nuclear negotiations with Iran, a very different situation than someone like Miriam Ibrahim, who was still in a very hostile country where it can look hopeless. And again, it was a situation where people were able to speak out, and there was a much quicker resolution. Mm-hmm. But we go back to some of the other examples in Iran so that people aren't discouraged. And one of the more recent ones was a pastor named Youssef Nanarkhani, who was actually imprisoned in Iran for 3 years and then sentenced to death for his work as a Christian. And ultimately, he was the death sentence was overturned, and he was released. Now, his case did not even get attention internationally until 3 years after his imprisonment. So Iran works pretty slow. And, of course, now with direct dialogue with the United States, it's a situation where, in a sense, Saeed has become almost like a pawn in these nuclear negotiations because of his American citizenship. So,
and I want to clarify this, Jordan. You're saying that because the U.S. and the government of Iran are communicating directly, not through envoys or third parties, but
right,
because of direct communication, things have improved for Saeed Abedini, or they've worsened?
Well, it's I think that the situation is taken longer because these nuclear talks drag on. Now, we just got another 4-month extension. That Iran does not have a reason to rush a release because of international pressure, the same way they might if they were just looking for some economic relief, which they are getting through these nuclear talks in the terms of billions of dollars. But because the talks have not concluded with a finalized deal, you know, I think at some point along the way, our government has finally got to realize that. I mean, they're being told by people who have made trips to Iran, a pastor named Joel Hunter, who's close to President Obama, who said, you know, in his meetings there, everyone was tying those two things together, Saeed and the nuclear talks. And the U.S. government's been weary of publicly acknowledging that, though. Mm-hmm. They keep saying that they bring it up every time that they meet at these talks on the sidelines of the talks. And so, you know, what I would say is that we've seen over the course of this 2 years Saeed's health and treatment up and down. I mean, from torture and beatings and solitary confinement to prison transfer to a worse prison. Now he's in a prison called Rajah Shahr. And then from that prison, he was in the got put into a private hospital, which was a significant increase in his treatment, much better, for about 8 weeks. And then he was with about 40 people, 40 different troops came from the Revolutionary Guard, seized him again, rearrested him at the hospital, and took him back to the prison. And then he started getting better treatment at that prison during some of the nuclear talks and the pressure there. So, you know, it's one of those situations where we have to be kind of unwavering in our work, and we do that with lots of countries around the world. And, you know, we've asked people, as you just played that soundbite from our client, Naghmi Abedini, to continue to speak out, not to forget Saeed.
Yeah, and let's talk about what that means, Jordan. Jordan Seculo, by the way, with us on the guest line. He's from the American Center for Law and Justice. We're short on time here, but what does it mean to speak out here in the United States? What conscientious Christians, how do we speak out in an effective and constructive way on this, Jordan?
Continuing to share his story with people at church, we've got a lot. We've got a website we actually created for the persecuted, so not just ACLJ, our ACLJ.org website. We have one called BeHeardProject.com, and we've got all the information there. We have the information about Miriam, obviously, but also Saeed, and he was kind of the reason why we started this new effort. And on September 26th, which it may sound like a long time in the future, but we're asking people to again come together in prayer events across the country. Many of these have already been scheduled, so you can go online at BeHeardProject.com, and you'll see under Saeed's information, prayer vigils. It marks the second anniversary of his arrest, so it's an unfortunate anniversary. But people are coming together all around the world on that day to pray once again. And when we did this last year, the attention was overwhelmed. We started getting coverage in news outlets that did not normally mm-hmm. cover this story. And so because of that, we're asking people to do it once again. It'll be, because the nuclear talks are still going on, it's very important. And if you go to that website at Be Heard Project and there's not an event in your area, there's the information there on how you can actually start the process to organize your own event.
Real quick, does the being heard, as in the spirit of the BeHeardProject.com enterprise, does it include us contacting those who represent us in the Congress and saying, this is a priority, we want Saeed Abedini back home?
Absolutely. And we have all of that information there at BeHeardProject.com. And throughout different times during the last 2 years as we've represented this family, we've worked on different angles. There have been congressional hearings. We've testified, Naghmi has testified before Congress.
Yes.
And a lot of the pressure now has been, honestly, directly onto the State Department. And we need that pressure coming from Congress as well. That's why we ask people to contact them. But to Secretary Kerry, it took a year and a half for President Obama to actually say it by name. Mm-hmm. He finally did so at the prayer breakfast about six months ago.
Yep.
And so we just need people to continue to pray and continue to speak out and not forget Saeed. And you know, every day we take is a new challenge because it's in a place where his life's at risk.
Jordan Seculo, he's the executive director of the American Center for Law and Justice. He's an attorney. We'll make sure to get a link on our website to BeHeardProject.com. Jordan, we appreciate what you do. Thanks for joining us. We'll check back again soon.
Thanks, Austin.
Look forward to another update. There's something to pray about and to engage with. BeHeardProject.com. 6:25, this is Austin Hill in the Morning. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, it's 6:35. Welcome to it. This is Austin Hill in the Morning. I am honored to be your host weekday morning 6 till 8 here on the Faith Radio Network. Still to come, some good news that we need to know about, also some guidelines that we need to know about as well as it pertains to our health and cholesterol. Our great friend Lisa Marone, physical therapist and author, she'll be joining us coming up after the top of the hour news into the second hour of our program. Also, later this morning, in light of what we're going to talk about here in just a moment, my goodness, it's still great to live in the free world, in the United States of America and in the Western world, where we can contemplate subjects like this. Is it time for a new translation, a new version of the Bible? It's a very interesting new, I guess you'd call it entrepreneurial upstart business venture. It's being reported in Christianity Today, and it's a very unique and very different translation, English translation of the Holy Bible, Old and New Testament. And we're going to talk about this later this morning. I'll tell you all about it. But that's what we're contemplating here in the U.S. That's not all. Let's turn our hearts and minds now to Eastern Europe. Big report out from our friends at Mission Network News about evangelicals being persecuted in some pretty profound ways in Ukraine. Now, this is a sovereign nation, yes, but it's being overcome incrementally, slowly, by the country of Russia. Joining us to talk about the plight of our brothers and sisters in Christ in Ukraine, Greg Yoder. He is with Mission Network News. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Greg, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back with you guys.
Yeah, great to hear your voice again. Where do you begin to tell us about what's going on in Ukraine? I mean, there's just that's been a hotbed and epicenter of so much stuff in the last 6 weeks, but how do you get that started?
Well, I think when you begin looking at it, I mean, everybody's heard of the fact that Russia and Ukraine are going at it. And even this morning, we're hearing about mortar shells now being lobbed from the Russian side of Ukraine. So we're beginning to hear that. But what you're not hearing is the religious persecution side of the story. And what you probably may or may not know is that in Russia and even parts of Ukraine, evangelicals are viewed as a cult. They're not viewed as normal people, almost weirdos in a sense. And in fact, if you think about it, going back to the Soviet days, Baptists specifically were known, at least according to some, the propaganda, to kill their children and drink their blood. That was the mindset of what Baptists were about. Well, now what we're seeing is a lot of these Russian extremists, these Russian-backed separatists are coming in and they're saying, are you an evangelical? Are you a Christian? And when they find that out, well, you saw it about 4 weeks ago where four Christians, so they were all a part of an evangelical Baptist church, they were killed and put into a mass grave. Well, just last week, one of my friends, Sergei Rakhuba, his childhood friend, he was actually, he just left his wife, he was heading somewhere in his car, he was stopped by separatists, found in his car that he was a Christian, and literally three different times he could have been just literally executed. But God had ordained that that would not be his time. He got out of the car. He was beaten. He was handcuffed. They said he was going to get shot. Well, then reporters came up. Hey, he takes some pictures. That prevented him from being shot. And then a couple minutes later, they were actually attacked by some Ukrainian soldiers who were trying to get the town of Donetsk back. Mm-hmm. That allowed him to get away. And actually fell down into a ditch, into an area where there were some roots of a tree, actually able to get in there, and they weren't able to find him.
Oh,
this is just one example of how evangelicals are being targeted by Russian separatists. In fact, they even raised a flag, an Orthodox flag, saying they are going to kill anyone who is antagonistic to the Orthodox Church, or I guess in some cases they view it as heretical. If you are heretical against the Orthodox Church, they're going to kill you.
Greg Yoder is the executive director of Mission Network News. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:39. Greg, I'm looking at a report that you wrote, actually, at the Mission Network News website, which we'll make sure to link back to this. This is really, really rich information you're providing us, and we appreciate it. You have a chart with the graphic of the flag of the country of Ukraine. The chart reads that the primary religion of the country of Ukraine is Christianity, but then evangelicals amount to 3.8% of the population. I presume we're distinguishing there the primary religion being the Orthodox Christian, or I guess the in some sense or another, I presume that's a state-run church, versus the evangelicals who are probably what, meeting in home churches, underground, those kinds of things.
No.
So flesh that out for us, if you would.
Yeah, actually, the Orthodox Church is primarily the religion, but in Ukraine, it's been one of the freest nations in the former Soviet bloc world. In fact, they have been sending evangelical Christians literally all over the former Soviet Union to reach the stands. And so this isn't necessarily a bad thing in Ukraine, although once you get to the eastern part of Ukraine, it is a totally different world from Kiev, is what we're told. And so, yeah, those numbers are predominantly Orthodox. There are 3% evangelical Christians. And evangelical Christians are doing well in most other parts of the country. But in eastern Ukraine, where these separatists are, it's becoming a very difficult situation. Now, you get to western Ukraine, it is a totally different country. And so when you see, you know, the Crimea that was actually taken over by Russia, they're trying to get, you know, three other cities within the Ukraine. And now, again, we're seeing these mortar shells being lobbed over by the Russian side. That's the dynamic that we see. It's that whole dichotomy of East versus West, and the West wanting to side with Europe and the East wanting to side with Russia.
Greg, most analysis that I read, most analysts that I speak with here on the program, they will say that there's every indication to believe that the country of Russia is just gradually chipping away at the otherwise sovereign nation of Ukraine with every intention of taking it over. As you go about the work of the Mission Network News, as you observe this more carefully than most of us here in the U.S., would you concur with that analysis?
I would agree with that. And when you look at what the situation is, I mean, basically President Putin has been testing the waters. And what has the world done?
Way, yeah.
I mean, what has the world done in response to shooting down an airliner, for all things? I mean, obviously he didn't take credit for that. He blamed the Ukrainians, of all people. But we know, even based on our own satellite views, that it came from the Russian separatists. And so when you see that and you understand what's happening even today and how Putin is not accepting responsibility and not doing anything to correct it, he's just thumbing his nose at the rest of the world, saying, you know what, they're not going to do anything. What's our next step? And we may see. I mean, they have all kinds of soldiers and equipment up against the border. So yeah. Who knows what's going to happen?
Greg Yoder, he's with Mission Network News. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Greg, stand by. I want to get your perspective on what we, as Christians in the Western world, in the free world, even here in the United States, what we can and should do in response to the plight of Christians in Ukraine. We'll talk more in just moments. It's 6:43. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being with us. Our program continues momentarily. On the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to it. Thank you for listening. I am Austin Hill. Our guest is Greg Yoder. He's the Executive Director of Mission Network News. It is the only news network doing what they do, reporting on the plight of Christians all over the world. Greg is with us talking about specifically the plight of the church, the evangelical Christian church and Christians generally in the country of Ukraine. Greg, I want to ask this very carefully and sensitively, but is there a sense among Christians in Ukraine that the United States and maybe Christians in the U.S. have abandoned them or given up being supportive of what they do?
The short answer is yes. They realize that President Obama's administration has done little to really affect the outcome of what's taking place in Ukraine, but not just the United States, Europe too, because when they gave up their nuclear weapons, they anticipated that Europe and the United States would defend them, and that hasn't happened. So there's that sense. But at the same time, the evangelical church in the United States and even Europe has reached out to many of these people, and I'm thinking specifically of helping many of the refugees, especially the Crimean Tatar refugees that were forced out of Crimea when that was annexed, and many of the others. They're saying that 120,000 refugees, internally displaced people, are existing right now in Ukraine. And the evangelical church is reaching out and helping them. And in fact, an organization called Russian Ministries out of Illinois, they're actually doing what they call I Care Packs, and it includes a food for a week for a family, but also scripture. And they're just eating the scripture up. It's amazing, Austin, what's happening. They're not just taking it and saying thank you. They're reading it because they need answers. They want to know where to find assurance, where to find security. And they're finding it in Jesus Christ. In fact, my friend Sergei Rakhuba, who's the president of Russian Ministry, says Ukraine is ripe for revival. And so we're praying that way, and I hope your listeners will pray that way as well.
Yeah, very interesting. With the comforting and stabilizing structures of a stable government and national security and physical protection, with those things compromised, if not stripped away, they're more inclined to cling to the gospel. That's kind of what I hear you saying, Greg.
Yeah, I think that's what's really happening. And when you see the church that has been very outspoken in the past, and I mean outspoken in a good way, they've been a loving church. It's been a very good church. I mean, they've reached out with the gospel in many other areas of the world. And now they're reaching out to their own, and they're seeing an incredible thing. And when you realize, even last Friday, when Ukraine's prime minister abruptly resigned because he was angry about a specific law that didn't get approved, even that insecurity or insecurity within the nation and within the government, people want security, and they want to know where to find it.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's destabilizing when that happens. Greg Yoder, he's with Mission Network News. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. In the final analysis, what do you desire, what do you believe American Christians can and should do in this context here? How do we do the right thing here in the U.S.?
Well, the first thing we need to do is we need to pray. And I don't mean just pray, oh, be with the missionaries, oh, be with those poor people in Ukraine. We need to find out exactly what's going on there so we can pray effectively. That's the first thing. And then we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it with our churches. We need to talk about it with our kids. We need to make sure that this is front and center. And then the third thing, we need to do something. You know, James 1:22 is very clear. You know, if you're a hearer of the word, you got to be a doer too. And we want people to do something about it. Now, we know y'all can't go. You probably may not necessarily be able to do everything, missionaries do. But you can give. And you think just, $50 can help a family for an entire week. More importantly, hear the gospel. That's something that we can do. And you think of the people in Ukraine who can't even go to the grocery store in eastern Ukraine because the economy's upside down. The people aren't working anymore. They can't even eat. And yet, we just worry about whether or not we're going to have a Coke this week. And so I don't want to guilt anybody into giving or getting involved or whatever. But I think the challenge for many of us is that so far around the world, well, how does this affect me? Well, it doesn't really affect you today, personally. But it's a brother and sister, the body of Christ, is suffering today.
Sure.
Whether they're suffering because they don't have any food or they're being attacked or because they need to help somebody and they can't do it. And that's where we can come in.
We can indeed. Greg Yoder, he is with the Mission Network News. You can find them at MNN Online. And don't worry if you don't remember that. We'll make sure to have a link back to Greg Yoder's writings here about the country of Ukraine, his text story that he has written, as well as audio from our discussion. Greg, we appreciate the great work of Mission Network News. We look forward to talking to you again. Thank you for what you do. Be safe, and we'll look forward.
Thanks. We appreciate that, Austin, and we look forward to talking with you again.
I look forward to it very much. These are very, very disturbing times that we live in. They're exciting times, and yet they are unnerving at times. And I appreciate what he's saying there. What's happening in Ukraine, what is happening in Israel, what is happening in all these various hotspots around the world might not affect the course of activities that you've got lined up on your calendar or the things that are on my calendar. May not impact us, at least not today or in this immediate moment. Not in any direct sense, perhaps. But seems to me that the teachings, especially of the New Testament, are pretty clear. When one part of the body of Christ is suffering, we are all suffering on some level. And this is a real opportunity for us to step up and be supportive. Again, we'll get that information linked on our website at myfaithradio.com. Now, still to come, speaking of all that's going on in the world, isn't it great that we are still sufficiently free, still sufficiently stable here in the United States, that we can actually think more long-term about our own physical health? Don't you love that? Isn't that a great thing? I mean, we might worry about how do we get insurance coverage or health care going forward in the future, but we're still free to take proactive steps to better care for ourselves. Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, and author, no stranger to those of us here at the Faith Radio Network. She'll join us coming up after the news at 7 o'clock to talk about three warning signs about high cholesterol medication. Got to question the meds at times, and we need to study up and be proactive and understand what exactly we're ingesting in our bodies, even if the drugs come with a prescription. Lisa Marone will help us do that coming up after the news at 7 o'clock. 6:52, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being with us. Good morning, and thank you for listening. It's the Faith Radio Network. Live the Promise with Susie Larson is now in a new two-hour version, weekday afternoons from 3 till 5. Last Friday, Susie spoke with Jeff Mannion. He was on the program to talk about what it means to live with less in a world that equates more with better. Wow, good news for all of us. Let's listen in.
Well, this really isn't about like gritting your teeth and grinding your gears and just trying to make it through some of these unwanted situations. God really does invite us to experience Him, not just get by or get through, but to experience Him in these places that we don't want to be in. So let's transfer to that for just a little bit. Maybe someone's in a marriage that they just can't stand, or they've got a wayward child or a job that just feels like it's killing them. How can they find peace and find joy in those places?
Well, first of all, let's just recognize how challenging that space is, and sometimes how tormenting that space is. If you have a child, particularly a teenager, that's run far from God and far from you, things can get interesting at home really, really fast. Jesus' disciples, they come to Him and they say, would you please teach us how to pray? And the Pharisees, they've got their way of praying, and John the Baptist taught his disciples to pray. But Jesus, would you teach us to pray? And what Jesus says next, we know is the Lord's Prayer. And one of the sentences is, give us this day our daily bread. And I don't think that's just about food. I think it's, Lord, give me today the patience I need today. Give me today the wisdom I need today, because I don't know what to do. Give me today the strength I need today, because I am out of gas. And I believe that our Father loves to have us come to Him and say, I am in need and I don't know how I'm going to make it. Please supply what I need today. And I think I have a dear friend right now who just experienced a bone marrow transplant dealing with leukemia. And he looked me in the eye on Monday afternoon and he said to me, I wouldn't trade this experience for $20 million. Because it has placed him in this situation where every day in his pain and in his isolation, he has had to grow in friendship with his Lord and cry out again and again. And the richness that he's experienced in this school of dependency to him was invaluable.
You look at even what's happening, Jeff, in our media, where everybody wants their 10 minutes of fame, as if that's going to be the thing. If people at your beck and call and everybody looks at you, and yet the 10 minutes of fame, it's like our shame has become our glory, as Scripture talks about. It's like, I don't really care what I'm popular for. I just want a reality show. And it's really, the culture is so turned upside down. And people who've gotten to the top, so to speak, will get there and say, is this all there is? And then you've got a man battling cancer saying, he's with me in this place.
Susie Larson speaking with Jeff Mannion, talking about living in a world with less, living with less, even as our world does suggest that more stuff, more whatever is better. Not necessarily. Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. That's when you hear her program. You can also find Susie Larson and her guests anytime at MyFaithRadio.com. That's our mobile-friendly website, MyFaithRadio.com. Now, coming up on today's program, I have it on good order. Susie will be joined by author Liz Curtis Higgs as they talk about how God uses trials for our good and for His glory. Live the Promise, Susie Larson, weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 here on the Faith Radio Network. Now, as our program continues, let's talk about this, the facts. Let's get the straight scoop on cholesterol, not just cholesterol as a problem, but cholesterol medication. Lisa Marone, a guiding light in sometimes confusing times when it comes to our health and our spirituality. She joins us coming up into the 7 o'clock hour. Also, do we really need a new translation of the Bible? It's a huge new entrepreneurial venture underway here in the U.S. To launch a very, very interesting new translation of the Holy Bible. We'll tell you about it coming up. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's 7:04. Thank you for being here. This is the Faith Radio Network, and we appreciate your listening. We appreciate your support of what we do. I'm Austin Hill, here weekdays 6 till 8 on the Faith Radio Network, where we seek to be informative and challenging and hopeful and helpful as you start your morning. Now, we oftentimes hear a lot about cholesterol and how that can become problematic if the wrong kind of cholesterol becomes too pronounced, too prevalent in our bodies, right? How about cholesterol medication? Let's talk about some of the realities of that. Our great friend Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, author, and speaker who encourages all to get healthy for heaven's sake. She'll join us coming up here in just about 3 minutes from now to talk about cholesterol medications and get some wisdom on that. So stand by. We'll speak with her momentarily. Also, is it time for a new version of the Bible? With all that's going on in the world, there's this very interesting. Our friends over at Christianity Today, kudos to them. Thanks to them. They are reporting on this. There's this new upstart entrepreneurial venture that is actually purporting to produce a new version of the Bible, presumably for those of us here in the United States of America. But it's, quote, designed and crafted for reading, separated into four elegant volumes, and free of all numbers and notes. So, how foreign is that, right? You don't have the chapter and verse numbers the numbers that indicate the chapters and verses. You don't have the liner notes and the things off, you know, in the margin and the footnotes and all that kind of stuff. Work of theologians and scholars down through the centuries who have researched the early writings, the original text of the Scripture, and the notes that help put us into put the Scriptures in context. Like, you know, the Apostle Paul wrote this to Timothy because he was commenting on a cultural condition back in the day that amounted to X, Y, and Z. None of that stuff. All that stuff's gone. It's just a new version of the Bible, as I said, designed and crafted for reading, separated into four elegant volumes, and free of all numbers and notes. Well, now, isn't that interesting? I guess in the minds of some, this is a more consumer-friendly version of the Bible. We'll talk about that coming up just about half an hour from now, and I'll be curious to get your comments on that. We'll open up the phone lines and take some calls. Do we really need a new version of the Bible here in the year 2014? We'll talk about that coming up. When we return, cholesterol medication. How do you know you're getting good stuff and in a proper dosage? Is there any concerns that we should have if our doctor prescribes cholesterol medications? Talk with Lisa Marone when we come back. 7:07, this is Austin Hill in the Morning. It's the Faith Radio Network. Don't go away. It's 7:08 on the Faith Radio Network. Let's get healthy for heaven's sake, shall we? We're going to talk with our guest. It's hard to call her a guest these days. Lisa Marone joins us here momentarily. You know, just to put this in context, if you're like me, your parents and your grandparents, when they were prescribed medication from the doctor, got the little hard copy prescription, they say, okay, well, take this into the drugstore and get it filled, and no questions asked. We do what the doctor tells us, and we move on. Not so much with me, perhaps not so much with you and others in our generation of adults. We need to question. We need to ask the tough questions in some cases. We need to be proactive and get as much information as we can. So how about when we're prescribed cholesterol medication? What sort of things should we be looking for? Lisa Marone from lisamarone.com. She joins us now on the guest line. Lisa, welcome back to our program. And tell us what's going on here with the cholesterol medication, things that maybe we don't find out about at the doctor's appointment.
Yeah, good morning, Austin. You know, high cholesterol, it seems to be all the rage today. More and more of my patients are coming in, and when I'm taking their
But wait a minute. I have to ask a clarifying question. High cholesterol is all the rage, or high cholesterol medication?
Well, kind of both.
Okay.
You know, we have many people getting a little bit healthier, for heaven's sake. They're getting their they're getting to their doctors when they're supposed to, and a lot of them are getting diagnosed with high cholesterol.
Yes.
And so their doctors are putting them on high cholesterol medications. And some of them take it seriously and take their medications, and others don't. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted just to start with is to say, listen, high cholesterol is kind of like having pebbles in the water that's running through your house pipes. You know, that's going to abrade the inside of your pipes and eventually wear them down. Your body's filled with vessels which are like pipes, but they're soft tissues. And so when we have these hard little cholesterol rocks bumping up against the walls, we have a lot of internal damage. And that's why it's really important, if your doctor does prescribe high cholesterol medication, to take him seriously and do take it. But like you said, Austin, there's some things that we really need to be kind of have an eye out for while you're on those medications.
Sure. Lisa Marone, she's a physical therapist, an author, and lecturer. She joins us regularly here on the Faith Radio Network. So we get the prescription. We want to take the doctor's advice seriously, but we need to be conscientious and ask questions and be proactive ourselves. Where do we begin in that process, Lisa?
Yeah, one of the first things to know is that there are some dietary things that you may be eating that are counterproductive to your high cholesterol medication. First of all, some of the brand names of high cholesterol medicines that you may be on are Lipitor, Crestor, Zocor, and these medications, we ingest them, and they need to be absorbed through our body, through our intestines and our gut. And if we are eating grapefruits or drinking grapefruit juice, there's a chemical in the grapefruit that's going to block the absorption of these high cholesterol medications, these statin drugs, from our gut, and it's significantly going to reduce its effectiveness.
See,
so
now that's kind of counterintuitive. That's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, grapefruit, my goodness, that's supposed to be healthy and good for us.
Right, it's high in vitamin C. It's a super thing to have, except if you're on these statin medications. And so sometimes people either listen with half an ear to the warnings that their doctors give them, or you kind of have that white coat syndrome where you just go deaf in the doctor's office, you know, after he says you have to take medication, you don't remember anything else after that.
Mm-hmm.
So if he has told you that, or if you don't remember that, if you're on a statin medication, stay away from grapefruit juice. You can have any other kind of citrus, but it's a special thing in grapefruit that is going to block that absorption.
Very interesting. Lisa Marone with us here on the Faith Radio Network. So we want to be careful, consumption of certain types of foods, grapefruit and grapefruit juice in particular, if we're prescribed these statin medications. You've also noted on your website, Lisa, that if we're not careful with this, we can actually bring about other kinds of diseases. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, there is a rare occurrence, but it is a real occurrence where when taking statin medications, you might start to develop a muscle damage. And that has a big, long name. It's called rhabdomyolysis. And what that basically is that in response to these statin medications, occasionally people will have muscle fiber breakdown. And when that happens, you'll feel like a sudden onset of achiness after you're taking these medications. When I say sudden, I just mean you haven't done anything to provoke that. You didn't go out and play softball or jog down the road or anything like that, no new exercise. But all of a sudden you're taking it and you're going, gosh, my arms are feeling achy, or I'm getting pains in my legs. That is a warning sign. You need to contact your doctor right away, and likely they will take you off of that medication. When your muscle tissue damages that way, it kind of all the internal portions of the muscles will go to your kidney, and it could cause kidney failure. So do take that seriously. Don't slough that off. If all of a sudden you started on this new statin medication and you're feeling this onset of muscle aching, usually in the legs and arms, you want to contact your doctor right away.
Lisa Marone, she is a physical therapist, an author, a lecturer, a public speaker. She tells us how we can get healthy, for heaven's sake. We'll continue with her in just moments as we talk about a big issue that a lot of people are facing in our country today, high cholesterol. More in moments. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's 7:14. Faith Radio Network, still to come later this hour, just about 20 minutes from now. I'll tell you all about a brand new version, a brand new interpretation of the Bible. Do we need a new translation of the Bible at such a time as this? There's an entrepreneurial venture underway here in the U.S. I'll give you the details, and we'll take some calls with your opinions about this coming up later this morning. Lisa Marone from lisamarone.com. That's Lisa, M-O-R-R-O-N-E.com. She's here telling us how to get healthy for heaven's sake. If you just joined us, she's got a great blog post. We'll make sure to put a link to it at myfaithradio.com about questions to ask, things to do if indeed you are prescribed cholesterol medication from your physician. Lisa, one of the things that you warn about, it, this is unnerving to me, and yet I'm grateful that you're speaking out about this and advising and educating people about it. That is the fact that certain kinds of prescriptions in the realm of cholesterol medication can actually cause liver damage if we're not careful. You're advising that we ask our doctor to check our liver enzymes on a regular basis. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's very important to understand what the liver does. God has created this amazing organ and tucked it up under the right side of our rib cage. And that organ is present to filter all of our blood and remove toxins. We always think of toxins as bad things, but medications actually have a good value to us, but the body still sees them as poisonous. And so it is what is going to remove those medications from your system. That's why you have to keep taking them regularly, because the body filters it out. And so if you happen to have liver damage, if you have been diagnosed with fatty liver syndrome, if you had a history maybe of alcoholism, even hepatitis C, something that has gone on in your body and has damaged your liver, you need to make sure your doctor knows that, because the statins or any medication that you take may just tax your liver to the point where you start to have elevated liver enzymes, and that's kind of a sign that your liver is not doing what it has to do, and that could be a dangerous thing because you don't want your body to become toxic. So it's very important for those reasons. It's also important, just as a side note, Austin, that if you happen to be pregnant, you're thinking about getting pregnant, or you're nursing, most medication sites tell you not to be on statins. And so you do need to run that by either your OBGYN or your general doctor.
Lisa Marone from lisamarone.com on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Lisa, talk to us for just a moment here in our final few moments. Talk to us about maybe taking proactive measures so we don't have to be prescribed cholesterol medication. You're all about the business of, as you say right there on your website, get healthy for heaven's sake. What do we need to be doing? Talk to the person who doesn't know exactly what their cholesterol level is. They haven't had any prescriptions before, but they're not as active as they should be. By the way, most of us fit into this category, I would suspect.
Yeah.
Talk to us about preventative measures, if you will.
Well, listen, I am very much a proactive, as you said, Austin. I would rather you not get sick than have to be sick and have medications prescribed to you. And so there was actually a study that came out in a medical journal called The Lancet. And what it found was that if you performed regular exercise, which is about 150 minutes of some kind of heart-elevating exercise a week, that your cholesterol would be lower than if you went on one of these statin medications. Okay, so a lot of times people just say, I'm just going to take this pill and I'll be fine. Well, that's not necessarily true. You'd be more fine if you went out and exercised, apparently, than if you had taken this medication, as long as you're doing it on a regular basis. And so exercise and eating a cholesterol-fighting diet, something that's going to decrease the amount of refined sugars that you eat, white breads, white pastas, white rice, those sorts of things are going to protect against cardiovascular disease. remember, as we started the first segment, I was talking about these fleshy pipes that your cholesterol and blood run through, your vessels. Now, if you eat poorly and you have this insulin resistance that will build up and you're eating, you know, lots of sugar and white foods, what happens is the lining of those vessels become very irritated and hypersensitive. It's kind of like a mother at the end of the day with, who's been staying all day in her home with her toddlers. You know, she's just like on her last nerve. And your vessels will get like that. And so when that cholesterol bumps into it, instead of there being a minor scrape, the vessel wall will react in an exaggerated way and it will build up all this plaque. And that's what swells and closes up that vessel. And so it's really important in cardiovascular disease. It's more important to eat well and exercise than it is to reduce your cholesterol levels. That's what they're finding, which is really very interesting. We used to be all about cholesterol levels, and now we're more about the inflammatory state of our bodies. That's more important, cardiologists are finding.
Isn't that interesting? Lisa Marone, find her at Lisa, MORRONE.com. We'll make sure to get a link to her thoughts on this issue of cholesterol from our blog page at MyFaithRadio.com. Lisa, we will take measures to get healthy, for heaven's sake. Love what you do. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll look forward to talking again soon.
Great. Speak with you soon. Have a super day.
All right. Good to be with you. That's invaluable information. Imagine that. Imagine how the world would be different. And I'm not saying this tongue in cheek. I'm asking you to think this through here, the implications of people actually, and I include myself in this, you and I and the vast majority of us here in the United States, even just in our country alone, if we took measures to, you know, and Lisa boiled it down to the two basic things, eat a healthy diet and get exercise. Imagine how that would upend the current conditions in healthcare in America. Very interesting stuff. LisaMarone.com. You can get info on that. Coming up later this hour, is it time for a new translation of the Bible? Our friends over at Christianity Today, kudos and thanks to them. They've got a very interesting report out about a new entrepreneurial venture, an upstart venture, that is purporting to publish a new version of the Bible that strips away all the numbers, you know, like chapter and verse numbers and all that kind of stuff. Oh, and by the way, it takes out all the footnotes and the endnotes and the notes from theologians and scholars down through the centuries that kind of help put the Bible into context. It's supposed to present the Bible into four elegant volumes, so you can just pick up a page and start reading. Is that what we need right now? We'll talk about that coming up in just moments. 7:24, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thanks for being with us. Good morning, 7:35. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings 6 till 8. And thank you for being a part of us. You can always find us at myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your support of our work here at Faith Radio. It's myfaithradio.com. All right, I have to pose the question here. Well, I don't have to, but I want to. And I'd like to get your input on this. Here's our number. It's toll-free, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We'll just open up and engage the phone lines here. 877-93-FAITH. Here's my question for you. Do we need, at such a time as this, in the rather tumultuous upside-down year of 2014, do we need an additional translation, a new translation of the Holy Bible? Now, let me be very clear here. There's this new entrepreneurial venture that's underway here in the United States to produce a new translation of the Bible. And let me be very clear, I am not presupposing that there is an absolute right or wrong answer to my question. I hope you'll take it seriously and give me your thoughts at 877-933-2484. This is just, I believe this is worthy of our attention, the fact that there is a new entrepreneurial venture underway that seeks to publish a new translation of the Bible. With all the other translations that we have available to us already, I think this is worthy of our attention, and it's worth asking the question. Now, here's why I ask, and once again, thanks and I guess kudos to the folks over at Christianity Today for publishing this story. It's that the title of the article is Introducing the Bible! Now with less exclamation point. Delete the chapter and verse references, kill all the notes, make it one column, and make $1 million. That's the subtitle of the column, or the editorial, the news story, okay? So here's the deal. There's a gentleman here in the U.S. His name is Adam Lewis Green. And not to get off in the weeds here and get to too many details, but Adam Lewis Green, I think we'd call him an entrepreneur in every sense of the world. He's raising investment capital through a website called Kickstarter.com. Now, he's doing this vis-a-vis the method of crowdfunding, and crowdfunding is something that I've talked about a fair amount on my weekend program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Got a fair amount of nonprofit Christian ministries that use crowdfunding as a means of raising money. And if you're not familiar with crowdfunding, well, we'll get to that another time. Suffice it to say that this guy, Adam Lewis Green, is raising money to produce a new translation, I'll call it, of the Bible. It's a new translation that is, quote, designed and crafted for reading, separated into four elegant volumes, and free of all numbers and notes. Now, the amount of money that he needs to get this going here, it's just, well, it surpassed $1 million now, so says the article from Christianity Today. Now, Green's project, it's named Bibliotheca. It is mostly an American Standard version of the Bible, with the these and thous taken out. And also, as I said, they've eliminated all the chapter and verse references, all the you know, the ways in which the Bible customarily in our lifetimes has been numericized, if you will, or numbered. All that is gone, and it's broken up into three categories, and it's supposed to be made for quote unquote elegant reading. Now, and all the notes, the footnotes, the endnotes, the historical references and so forth, you know, all the stuff that's off to the side and the margins and down to the bottom of the page in your Bible, notes that have been added by scholars and theologians down through the centuries, certainly down over the last century or so, people who have researched and studied biblical history and world history, and they put those crazy little notes in there to kind of help contextualize what was going on at the time that the original New Testament was written or the original Old Testament or what have you. All that stuff, gone. And it's supposed to be, as I said, just it's broken up into three sections made for elegant and enjoyable reading. Now, let me just give to you, this is, some of these will be familiar to you, some of them are not. But let me just give you an idea of some of the various versions and translations of the Bible that already exist. This is just in the English language. Now, granted, the Bible originally was written in Hebrew and Greek and portions of it written in Aramaic. Back in the day, so to speak, it's been translated into multiple languages over the course of the centuries. There are nonprofit ministry organizations that are involved in translating the existing Bible into the remotest of languages. I'm thinking first and foremost of a group called Wycliffe Bible Translators. Okay, I mean, they quite literally, they raise up and train linguists to go to the remote parts of the third world and figure out languages that people use, languages in some cases that aren't even in a written format, and they figure out how to write the language and then translate the Bible into that language. How difficult would that be? Well, it's extremely difficult, and Wycliffe Bible Translators, which is, again, as I said, a nonprofit ministry headquartered here in the United States of America, they send people into the remote parts of the world to do that. The International Bible Society is another U.S.-based nonprofit organization that does a lot of that similar kinds of work. So we've got a lot of Bible translation going on here in the United States already. But consider this, for example. We've got the New American Standard Bible. We've got what is referred to as the Open Bible. Some of us, I count myself among this, some of us grew up on the King James Version of the Bible. That was written in the Old English, that was chock full of a lot of the thees and thous and thines and that kind of stuff. And that was, I mean, that clearly conveyed that, hey, if you want to pick up the Bible and read this, this is, you know, something meant for a different culture other than your own, okay? So a lot of these New American Standard Bible and Open Bible and a lot of these more modern translations were really an effort to kind of correct course from the King James Bible that was one of the first received here in the U.S. at the time of the founding of our country. And then, of course, back in the early 1990s, you might recall a translation of the Bible called The Message. Remember when The Message was new? I'm kind of dating myself here by the fact that I remember when The Message was new. But The Message was an effort to convey the truths of the Scripture in more inclusive language that was even more in step with our modern culture. Okay, so now comes this new version of the Bible that completely takes out all the references to chapter and verse and the numericizing, the numbering of the individual verses in the chapters, which has been a part of our understanding of the Bible really all my life, and I'm sure all of yours. And as I said, this new version of the Bible is designed and crafted for reading separated into, I said, three elegant volumes. It's actually broken down into four elegant volumes, free of all numbers and notes. Now, if you're listening to that and thinking, well, wait a minute, how do you do the Bible? How do you present the Bible without numbering the individual verses? Consider this for just a moment. And this was something that's actually a very thoughtful, very astute theologian and professor of mine when I was studying in a theological seminary back in the mid to late 1990s, in one of the theology courses that I was required to take, a seminary professor once said to me, sometimes, and this is a loose paraphrase here, but this professor said to me, sometimes I get to thinking that numbering the individual verses of the Bible was one of the worst things that ever happened to God's Word. Because what that has led to, especially over the course of my lifetime and perhaps yours, especially over the last, you know, half century to a century here in the United States, the numbering of the individual scriptures has led to people taking a little chunk out of the Bible, taking it completely out of context, and not seeing the broader story, if you will, the broader context, the bigger picture, taking little chunks of scripture out of context, and sort of taking the verse and running with it, so to speak. I mean, think about that for a moment. It would be odd to me to pick up a Bible and not see the individual verses numbered and listed, you know, verses 1 through 30 in chapter 8 or whatever it is. That would be very foreign to me. By the same token, I can tell you, and perhaps you've experienced this as well, I've been involved in Bible study groups and even sat in sermons and in churches, and I'm told, you know, go find your life verse. Go pick out the verse that is most meaningful to you. Write the verse on your computer screen, or make a note of it and put it on your refrigerator, whatever. I mean, the fact is, we are encouraged regularly to take individual passages of the Bible, numbered verses, if you will, take them completely out of context, and that oftentimes leads to sort of a decontextualizing of the wisdom that is ours in the Scriptures. So could there be some advantage to a Bible that doesn't number the individual verses? I have to admit, this new entrepreneurial venture here, this new Bible, broken down into, quote-unquote, four elegant volumes, free of all numbers and notes, this is a little strange to me, but it does cut in multiple different ways. Do we need a new version of the Bible right now? Here's our number. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We'll talk about it in moments. It's 745. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill here, weekdays 6 to 8. Do we need, at such a time as this, a new translation of the Bible? There's a new one in the works, at least there's funds being raised, capital being raised to launch a new version of the Bible. It's an entrepreneurial venture Do we need a new version of the Bible right now? 877-933-2484. Bob is up next in Wisconsin. Bob, welcome to Faith Radio Network. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hey there.
I am a Lutheran pastor, and I guess my short answer would be that we do not need another translation of the Bible at this time.
Okay. Tell us why.
Well, first of all, from what you described, it doesn't seem to me that it's really a new translation. It's really a new format. I think various translations of the Bible are helpful because they try to accomplish different things. They present the translation in different ways. Like you mentioned, the New American Standard, which is a word-for-word translation.
Mm-hmm.
The New International Version is more of a sentence-by-sentence translation. What Dr. Peterson did with the Message Bible is he took out the verses on purpose to make it more readable. So in terms of format, I think it's been done. And of course, we also have the book, which is literally presenting the Bible as a readable document. I mean, more like you would read a novel. So I think that formatting idea has already been done and done successfully. And he's really not presenting a new translation. He's presenting it in a new way, but that way has been done.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I appreciate your thoughts on this. And the distinction you're making here, Bob, between translation versus format, I think that's probably the way you're characterizing it. It's probably a more accurate way to characterize what this new entrepreneurial venture is getting at. What do you think of the idea of, I mean, speaking of changing up the format, as it were, breaking up the Bible into, quote-unquote, four elegant volumes, no numbering of the verses, no notes from the scholars and from the theologians, just, you know, four elegant volumes of pleasant reading. What? How does that strike you?
Well, I think the idea is good. One of my mentors is Dr. Leonard Sweet, who is a key person in terms of looking at the Church of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And the word that
Is he Lutheran, by the way? I have some familiarity with
him. He comes from the Methodist, what he calls tribe.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. And he has coined the word versitis. And American Christians tend to be trapped in versitis, where we spend a lot of time looking at verse and verse and verse and verse. So I'm not saying that the idea is not well thought of. It's very, very well thought of to look at the Bible in context and to look at passages as a whole. In fact, in our larger church now, we're using a different way of presenting the Bible on Sunday, which is called the narrative lectionary, mm-hmm. which takes bigger pieces of the Bible in order to maintain its context.
Very interesting.
So I'm not disputing the format. What I'm saying is it's been done.
Yep, that point's well taken. Bob, I appreciate your call very much. Just real quick before we let you go, you're a part of the Lutheran denomination. You're a Lutheran pastor, I believe I heard you say, correct?
Correct, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Okay, well, the Lutheran Church, I mean, you've undergone and engaged in some very serious theological training, I would imagine, and you're probably a seminary graduate, am I right about that?
Correct.
What do you make of
this?
And
I have my doctorate degree in preaching.
Okay, well, there you go. You're a learned man, and you didn't just walk into the pastorate, so to speak. There's a lot of training that went into it. What do you make of this notion that this new upstart version or formatting of the Bible that we're talking about here eliminates all the notes and the references, historical and otherwise, from the scholars and the theologians? You know, eliminate all the footnotes and the endnotes and all that stuff that's just distracting. What do you make of that?
I understand the concept, because basically what he's trying to do is to create a Bible where you sit down and read it like you would read a novel. And
I think that's exactly what they're trying to do.
You go back and forth.
Yeah.
To check, like, you don't go back and check the footnotes in a novel. You don't go online and see what somebody else said about your novel. You just sit down and you read it.
Is that necessarily the way we should be reading the scriptures?
Well, the distinction I make with people is the distinction between the Bible that I read in my devotions and the Bible that I study from. And those are two very different Bibles. If I'm reading a Bible in devotions, I really like Dr. Peterson's, the Message Bible. It's very readable, and people understand it.
Mm-hmm.
If I want a study Bible, then I want the New American Standard, because I know it's a word-for-word translation that they strove to translate every word as accurately as possible.
Very good.
So if he's creating a devotional Bible for people to wake up in the morning or go to bed at night and read, and for that purpose, it's very helpful.
All right. Bob, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Great to have you with us in the Madison area, listening to us here on the Faith Radio Network. And thanks for your thoughtful comments. Do we need a new translation or new format, if you will, of the Bible? There's yet another new entrepreneurial venture that is preparing. It's actually raising money, and it's raised quite a bit of money to launch a new version of the Bible. Do we need that at such a time as this? 877-933-2484, that's our number. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. It's 753, and I'm Austin Hill. Back in moments. At 7:55 on the Faith Radio Network, and thank you for being here. Thank you for your support of our work at myfaithradio.com. By the way, earlier this morning, if you were with us, or even if you weren't, just a little update here. We spoke with a gentleman named Jordan Sekulow. He's with the American Center for Law and Justice, talking to us about the plight of our fellow Christian, fellow sojourner, but also our fellow American, Saeed Abedini. He is an American pastor, fully naturalized U.S. citizen, who originally is from the country of Iran. He immigrated legally here to the United States. He's a U.S. citizen. He has made several trips over the course of his adult life, his very young 33-year adult life. He's made several trips to the country of Iran to try to minister to people there. In particular, he was working on building an orphanage for children there, and he was taken into captivity by the Iranian government. He is still there. Best as we can tell, he is subject to torture and mistreatment of a tall order in an Iranian prison. We'll have info on the Saeed Abedini and things we can do to be supportive of him and his family. I'll have that posted at myfaithradio.com coming up later this morning, so I hope you'll check back on our website later in the day. Real quick, before we wrap up the program, here's something that you might not have seen or heard anywhere else. This kind of escaped the broader news media, apparently. They just didn't catch this in some of the dominant news agencies around the United States. But thank you to our friends at ChristianPost.com. Dozens of Christian faith leaders from the greater New York City area united at the Faith Exchange in New York City last Friday to express their undying support for Israel in its current conflicts with the Palestinian group Hamas. Israel and Hamas are currently involved in a violent and ongoing clash that one religious leader attending Friday's event described as, quote-unquote, a defining issue of our time. Now, again, so much of what we see in the dominant news media is trying to equate Israel and Hamas, make moral equivalents of them, if you will. And I would argue that a lot of the news coverage that we see is decidedly anti-Israel and sort of portraying Hamas and the Palestinians as helpless victims of this very evil regime called the Nation of Israel. Nonetheless, 32 pastors and other Christian leaders gathered with Ambassador Ido Arihoni, the Consul General of Israel, to the state of New York, and discussed the importance of supporting Israel during this time of conflict and violence. I'd make note of a gentleman named Dr. Paul DeVries, president of the New York Divinity School, who in no uncertain terms said, quote, "The media tries to paint this as two forces that we have to bring together and try to resolve their differences. But one is a terrorist group, the other supports core biblical values. Israel is on the side of core biblical values, and we need to stand with them." Thank you, Dr. DeVries, for your unwavering support. And thank you for listening. I'm Austin Hill. I'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 till 8. Meantime, find us at myfaithradio.com. Have a great day. We'll see you next time. Let's measure the moment. Let's even one to end. podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.